Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCBQ 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
We have Alan Power with us. Thank you for doing the interview.
You're welcome, Al. Looking forward to it.
Great. So before we get into the meat, let's talk about you. So what led you to writing about Diana and got you into this subject? Just tell the audience a little bit about yourself.
Okay. Basically, I just had a desire to write for some time. I had an IT company for a few years, and that went, and I decided I was going to take up my desire to write a book. And there were lots of things I was thinking about writing, but the one thing that really annoyed me intensely was the state of the British nation and the monarchy and the way they were treating Diana Spencer. And then when she was finally murdered, I just could not believe it. And I was so enraged by it that I just thought something's got to be done about this. And I thought, well, yeah, but what can I do? Nobody else has managed it. And I thought, well, there's no point in saying that. If anyone said that, nothing would ever happen. So I gave it a go. And I started it in 2003, in November 2003, and just went flat out researching the detail, interviewing people, reading stuff that existed about it in the whole bit. And then by 2006, I'd written the non-fiction side of it. And then I'd also written a real strange mix I'd had. I had the first half of the book as non-fiction, and the second half as a story, reverse engineering the facts from what I'd written down and I'd gleaned, to write a story about what, in my view, happened. And that, in fact, I'm in the process of editing right now to come out in a few weeks' time. We tried to get people like Penguin and Little Brown, who had some degree of interest in it in about 2006, to publish it as a book, you know, non-fiction at the front and then fiction at the back. But they thought it was an interesting idea I got from one person, but they said no, it wouldn't work. So then I had to break them down, and then of course, whilst I'd done all that, then 2007, the inquest was coming up. Then I knew I'd have to spend quite a lot more time then researching the inquest to add to what I already had, the evidence I'd gleaned before that. And they gave me a chance then to assess what happened during the inquest, what I knew had happened before, and to notice all the issues, all the points they hadn't brought out at the inquest, they hadn't discussed, or they'd given a different interpretation to, and all the main and very important points they'd deliberately ignored. So that gave me a lot more clout to write my book. And that's where I went on from there.
Right. So now when you were doing the research and kind of going to write the book, how did people respond to you, like when you were talking to people or out researching?
By and large, very well. The response is quite good. I think most of the witnesses really didn't like what happened any more than I did. But they were in a difficult position because they'd witnessed events take place, and they obviously had some pressure on them not to respond in too positive a way. I think it's fair to say that. I had one, for example, the Japanese TV company's interested in doing some work, and I was fairly sure I could get some of these witnesses to come along and talk to us, and they'd go on camera on Japanese television. And I couldn't get one single witness to take part. None of them would join in at all.
So what do you think the fear is? Like, or is it just, like, what's the reason behind that, do you think?
Basically, it's intimidation part of the British police and the British security services, and indeed also, I think, the French, DGSE as well, the equivalent of CIA or MI6 in France. They just they're controlling the whole thing. They put a clamp on the whole thing. It was not to be released for what had happened, for what had been responsible for her death. And they intimidated people. I mean, I've been intimidated myself. And they just intimidated people to try and prevent them from sort of taking the risk. It didn't work with me, and it has worked with a lot of other people out there.
Right. And so let's start in then. So how do you sort of think that Diana was killed? I mean, obviously in the car, but what do you think how do you think the plan came about?
Well, I think my personal view is that, and I think it's from a lot of cross-reference information, so I can't say to you that I know that I watched a man give a nod to MI6. Clearly, I didn't do that. But one can glean information by reading through the evidence and understanding various aspects of what took place. It's pretty clear to me that the nod came from the palace to MI6 to continue with the assassination. And I think that's where essentially it came from. The MI6 group that were putting into this as a black op used a team called the Increments, which is a team of SAS and SBS troops that are seconded to MI6, specifically for the purpose, and indeed the Prime Minister, specifically for the purpose of dealing with violent situations offshore, not allowed to do it in the country, theoretically. So that was basically a team specifically for that purpose and trained for that purpose.
Right. And so now I've heard a lot of different reasons. Why do you think Diana had to be killed?
There are several reasons, and people come up with all sorts of different ideas. They come up about the landmine situation and being nuisance throughout the world, both the US, the UK, and other governments. In the arms industry and the cash that they were making out of the arms industry. Perhaps an element of truth in that, but I think the main central reason that the monarchy was involved, that wouldn't mean the monarchy alone, I wouldn't have thought. I think the prime reason was that Diana had been abused from the very beginning. I mean, she was abused before she was even married. Charles Windsor was even, shacking up with Camilla Parker Bowles before he got married. And on his wedding night. So the whole thing is just quite unbelievable. She was just abused, treated like an incubator, and treated appallingly, quite frankly. So really, she was just used for one particular purpose. Now, she knew that, obviously not at the time, but later on she did. And when she realized what had happened, so how she'd been used and abused, she had her heir and spares, they called, so William and Harry, then that was it, her job was done. And she said, when that happened, when Harry was born, Charles saw her in the Queen's Mary Hospital in London, that he saw her, and he left. And she said she knew at that moment that he'd gone to his baby, as she described it. That was it was over. He'd done his job, he'd done his duty, and the children were there. So she was just used as a chattel, and that was just quite, honestly, frankly, completely disgusting. And then, of course, she got really annoyed by it. Now, she's a very independent individual, a very strong-willed lady, and she wasn't going to put up with it. And she had some lots of evidence about what they'd been getting up to at the palace, all their sexploits and their predilections they had. And she was she made up a dossier, a thick dossier on this. She had a copy of it, and she gave the copy to her friend Simon Simmons, who got nervous, unfortunately, and said she destroyed it after being under her mattress for about a month, because she was very nervous about what was going on behind the scenes. That was after Diana had been murdered, of course. So I think that, without a doubt, that was the prime reason for it. Also, the police spent some time trying to track down these stolen artifacts, as they call them, and they're checking up with Paul Burrell and this guy called Brown, and one of Diana's other butlers. And they arrested them both, they investigated them, they searched their homes a lot, and I'm pretty certain they were looking for the dossier, not for stolen artifacts. And within about literally 2 years later, it took about 2 years to bring this thing to court, Burrell was about to go into court, and amazingly, the Queen remembered, literally a matter of just a couple of days before he was going to give evidence about what he knew, what was going on, she suddenly remembered that he'd taken them for safekeeping, and there was no need to go to court at all. So it was all called off. The whole thing was really quite remarkable.
Yeah. So do you think the people that were in the car were involved, like the driver, for instance, Henry Paul?
No. Only Paul was basically conned into running the show. He was basically... he was a very loyal servant, a loyal employee of the Ritz Hotel, Fayed, and of Dodi. They worked all very well together, and he did his job looking after them, driving them around the place occasionally in there just to help out. No, he certainly wasn't involved, but he was known to be cooperative. He's ex-military, and he was used to just doing as he was told, basically, and he was structured by MI6. To set the whole thing in motion, to bring it to where they wanted to be. Use the car they chose the particular car without tinted windows, the flash would be able to work when it went up, smaller cars, so the windows wouldn't be blacked out, all sorts of stuff. And they got him to drive it. I mean, they could have easily got somebody else to drive it. There was another guy available. And in fact, even Dodi's chauffeur could have been brought back in for it. But they got him to drive, they knew he would drive, and they instructed him, in my view, to take the car that particular route. That's the route it had to take, and it had to go, and it had to enter the Amber Tunnel. Otherwise, there would have been no assassination.
And so now Dodi Fayed, did it matter that he was in the car? Do you think there was any sort of angle toward him either, or...?
No, I think perhaps if... I think the target was, without doubt, Diana. She was number one target, and she had got to go. It was because of the situation with the monarchy, because of the situation of what she knew, because of what would have come out, irrespective of whether she married, fired, or not. I think the fact that he was in the car was probably the way they thought. A bonus, if they could just get the whole lot wiped out in one go, was the best way of handling it. I think as far as Henri Paul was concerned, I think he was also a target, quite frankly, because he would have known what they'd been telling him to do. He'd have known who was telling him what to do it. And I think if he survived, then he could have given some serious evidence against them. So I think Fayed, Diana, in fact, the only one that really wasn't on the target list was Trevor Lee Jones. But having said that, I think they would rather he'd gone as well, because there was a man there who knew what had happened. And he's actually been known to have said to Fayed's housekeeper, Karen McKenzie, later, matters a few months later, that if I remember, they'll kill me.
What do you think it's going to turn out now? Like, now that there's more talk about it again and more people are doing things, do you think they'll ever change, they'll ever discover, or anybody will go to trial for it?
Well, in order to make that happen, they have to be very, very, very fortunate, I think. Quite frankly, I think it's highly improbable because, anyone who's getting close to it like I have been, get set on. I've had, when I was good, I went to my flight training, I'm a pilot, private pilot. I went in some flight training in Gloucester Airport, official Stamson Airport. And on the way back from Stamson to Douglas, I was manned to Rollingsway Airport. The plane was half full, and I went and sat on it on the way back. It was a few weeks before my book was published, the first one was published, the one with the errors in that had been stuck in there by MI6. There was a guy sitting on the aircraft, next to the seat that I was allocated, and they went and sat down, and there was a long chat. He was MI6 GCHQ, computer section. His name was Patrick, or he was Patrick Condon, I presume. And we had a long chat about the book. He told me that my book was going to cause him a serious problem, all sorts of stuff. Now, I'd like to know how he knew that, because the book hadn't just been published. So how was he able to read it? And of course, they're supposed to have permission to do this sort of thing. They're supposed to have especially a legal framework in which they're able to apply for this sort of thing. So some presumably must have given them permission to get access to my work, even though quite recently the government have been trying to pass this through Parliament. So they'll have the power, they'll be able to invoke such powers. They don't need to bother, they do it anyway. I bother. He knew all about this stuff. And he came over in terminal afterwards and just smiled at me, looked at me in the eye and said, good luck, Alan. And then Dan Walt was going down. He's the one I'm pretty certain, probably personally, put the changes in my book, put the errors in my book to try and destroy my credibility, you know, as a public.
Right. And so how is that turning out for you? Like, how's that gone?
Well, first of all, that happened, and then, of course, I found out about him, so I went flat out. I think he wanted to find out, actually, whether, in fact, I knew, because if I'd known, I just popped everything, pulled it out, done all the changes, and then pushed it out again. So there'd been no need, then, there'd been no point in having this other character come out with some rubbish and pack of lies about me to enhance it further. And this guy came out with some stuff about my book, which was doing extremely well. 2,000 copies, hard copy, hard copy in the first 8 days. And suddenly this stuff starts to falter because they're just saying this pack of lies about me. So that has caused a major problem. Then, after I've done all the changes, for the last year almost, I've not been able to sell them in the US or in the UK still because Amazon just hadn't been able to somehow organize the sales so they could be bought through the system. So I've had a major problem over the last 15 months.
Wow. And has it gotten a little better the last few months, or the last, is it?
No, funnily enough, I chuckled. Jeff Bezos I've taken it to, and he has got his team looking into it, and has for the last 6 weeks, so maybe 7 or 8 weeks. And it's only been this week, which in fact of days ago, we managed to sort of that in the US. You can now go on to Amazon.com and buy the new version, the updated version of the book. You now get it, which you couldn't until then for the whole of the last year. And amazing, and no one still can't in the UK, I'm still going to make it work over here. But the, amazing, the BBC called this last year just gone the Royal Year. So you can imagine how they feel about this book of mine being out there zipping around the place while they're trying to push the monarchy further forward, especially William and Kate, and try to get them to a more pleasant side of the monarchy and try and put the rest of them in the background.
Have you ever talked to any of the royal family or any of their people, let's say?
No, I've had Harry on my website.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I haven't actually spoken to them directly at all. I have considered actually trying to contact Harry because he'd be the only one worthwhile speaking to him. He's a bit more of a lad. He'd be, I think, bloody furious what happened to his mother. I'm not that William wouldn't, but he's got a job. He's going to become king, and he's got a huge responsibility. But I think Harry might just be persuaded to be a little more accommodating. So that may be, well, it is on my list, but it's not a priority.
Yeah, yeah. And so no response from the royal family at all?
Not to my book, no. I mean, other than have MI6 do what they've been doing, have intimidation of me, people following me across on the ferry to England, and the ferry back over again, and then the same guy with two guys in the back of the car about 6 weeks after he's followed me back across over to the island, walking down my drive, and with two guys in the back of the car. So I spotted him and went outside, and we eyeballed each other. I said, well, could I help him? And he just looked at me, I looked at him, and he turned around and walked off. He had a reason for doing that, but I don't know what it was.
Back to the accident. Now, so I've also heard things about, let's say, the ambulance itself, like that come and the people, that they took too long and that they purposely didn't want to revive Diana.
Yes, I know. And it's there are a lot of situations where you can discuss that sort of thing. You can say, yes, there's the CCTV, there's real evidence about the car itself that was used and so on. But the problem is that I've got, and all good investigative authors in my view must do, is to only put down the facts, the truth, the details, something you can prove, not stuff that you believe might be the case. So when it came to the ambulance, frankly, there is no evidence. There are documents, you can hear what people said to whom, who said what, who said in what timing and so on, but none of it's actually definitive. And you can draw conclusions. I think the guy is prepared to make stories up or just go along with his opinions, create an opinion, and then put the opinion down as fact. Well, then, yes, I suppose you can make a story up around this. But I'm not prepared to do that. I mean, that's not being investigative. That's just giving you my opinion. Who do I want to know my opinion? It's you want to know what I've gleaned, what I've found out, what I can show you is the truth. And then you want to form your opinion. That to me is how it should be. The reader is a judge. They read the facts you present them, and then they make their mind up.
Right. Yeah, that's sort of what it should be. But the world's kind of going a different way lately, you know, with so much media just giving their opinion. So.
Yeah. I don't know.
Okay. Now, I've also seen there's some controversy and some things going on around you, and that you've had to write a dissertation here. What's that all about? Like,
well, when the magic of them these changes to my book, and I discovered them, and I had to quickly start trying to change them, within a matter of about, let's see, about 10 weeks of my book, first book, the first publication coming out, I had this character called John Morgan, who's either a fool or a fraudster, which is what I have described in the dissertation, coming up with all sorts of stuff. He wrote, actually wrote a book about me, which was just a pack of unbelievable lies, having first of all put in the facts that MI6 had put in the book. So basically he had that to start with, and I couldn't disagree with that because it was there, and I could read it myself. But then, of course, like very quickly corrected all that and everything else, and then he said a pack of lies beyond you would not believe, just building it up into all sorts of horrible stories, and it just wasn't true. So I thought I had to rectify that. So I just put a book out, or sorry, a dissertation out, about 43 pages, called John Morgan, Fool or Fraudster. Now, they didn't like that, and the boys in Grey didn't like it in London either. It was within a matter of a few weeks. It was taken down off the Amazon site. Now, it's still available on Google, iPhones. You can get it from, you know, on your iPhone or your tablet. Barnes & Noble, Magster, and Google, they're also still selling it. So they couldn't get rid of it altogether. It's still there. And basically describes what's been happening from then, the names of the MI6 officers involved, what's been going on behind the scenes, describes the detail of all these nasty little lies you've been telling about me. And I've rectified them all, about, what, 90% of them, all the way down on the side there, describing what he was saying is just not true. Now, to be fairly honest with you here, Al, if I'd had $1 million spare, and that's what my London lawyers told me I'd need to go and sue in US, UK, and Australia, and I say it may not cost that much, but I have to have it available to pursue it right to the bitter end, then I would have gone for his jugular straight away, no hesitation, and he'd have been in serious hot water because it's all a pack of lies. It is a pack of lies. But I just didn't have $1 million spare to go and commit against him. So I was completely stuffed on that, basically. They knew that already.
Right. Well, what do you think the point was for this John Morgan? Like, why do you think he did that?
Well, he's written a load of junk about the same sort of subjects, God knows how many books, all with his opinions or sort of describing it earlier on. He just writes, he has an opinion, creates opinions about things, and then he writes stories about around his opinions, and he writes them as facts. And so, you know, you would not believe, I've got a bit of it here, which is describing some of the stuff he's saying in one of his things right now. He's trying to make out that he knows and discovered all the stuff. He's talking about the ambulance, in fact. He's talking about that particular part of it. And he's saying that both Drs. Martino and De Rossi, who are both working for the intelligence services, no evidence, but he's just retelling it. And then he goes on to say about Drs. De Rossi and Martino would have been working on the night on behalf of an intelligence agency. And there's little doubt that their motive would have involved some form of reward, probably monetary. Now, that's not how you word a non-fiction book. You know, those are his actual words. You just have to write down what you know as facts, not make stories up as you go along. And it's basically, I just had to find some way of destroying that. And the reason why he did it is for commercial reasons, because he killed my book off. Because my book was the one that MI6 has already said and was going to cause them a problem. And he knew that, and he wanted to get it in the shadows as fast as possible.
Right. So now you obviously think that he didn't do a great job in investigating. Is there anybody out there that you sort of think has done a good job besides yourself?
Yes. There was one guy, one pair, Americans actually, Time magazine reporters, Sankton and McLeod, they wrote a book way back in 1998, just after the assassination. And theirs was exemplary. It was there are a few others that have been written that have been quite, you know, readable. But apart from mine, that has really now caused MI6 a serious problem, that one from Sankton and McLeod was exceptionally good. They really went to town. They didn't give you a load of rubbish or opinions. They gave you facts as they gleaned them. And the facts they managed to discover were quite alarming. And I think it was largely down to that book those guys wrote. I think they're based in Los Angeles. That, I think, is what caused the whole problem. That's what caused MI6 the problem. That's what caused the monarchy the problem. If that book hadn't come out, the whole lot might have quietened down within a couple of years.
Right. And out of all the facts that kind of have come out in this, what do you think would be the one that would cause the biggest sort of shock from people?
You mean what? As far as the building up towards the attack or what?
Yeah.
I think the brutality of it, but then I suppose you could argue, well, if they're going to have something that's got to look like an accident, and it did have to look like an accident, they couldn't just do something, you know, an injector or something, and just have it just expire, and examine that and be found that it had to look like an accident. That was crucial. It had to be brutal. I think the whole thing, the whole story is just disgusting from beginning to the end, and I'm ashamed of my country for doing this. It's just beyond the pale, quite honestly, we can ever behave in that manner. And it's a bit like, in a way, to my mind, and I start getting into politics elsewhere particularly, that, you know, this business about ISIL and ISIS and stuff, and when Britain and the US go and attack Iraq in the second so-called war, where we murder 500,000 women and children whilst they still lay in their beds asleep, incinerating them and so on while they slept. And then Tony Blair being interviewed and saying, well, he wasn't a very nice man, that was the only excuse for doing what he did. That to me just disgusts me. And I think it's about time the people stood up and said, right, catastrophe, enough, finish.
Yeah. So now with Diana, why is there still so much interest in her and that about this whole...
Because they know, the people know, instinctively know, that it was murder. Too much evidence came out, Sanctum McLeod did a good job there. Then a lot more evidence started coming out. People began to realize that basically there's more to this than met the eye. For example, I know some interesting stuff happens across the board. I know a guy called David Jones. He was one of David Cameron's inner sanctum cabinet members until just about 4 months ago. He'd read my book, and he and his wife had to, and his PA. And he said to me, if I have a problem with MI6 continuing going on the line, to let him know, hey, you'd have a word with William Hague. William Hague at the time was the British Foreign Secretary, who was the political boss of MI6. I said, fine, not now, Dave, let me just see how things go through and we'll work it out. A few months back, two people were sacked out of David Cameron's cabinet, David Jones and William Hague. David Jones went completely, and William Hague was taken, stepped down as Foreign Secretary, and I became leader of the House. So I think that might be another huge coincidence, but I think perhaps not. They couldn't have the boss of MI6 be prepared perhaps to go and have a word with them on my behalf. That wouldn't have worked too well. So I think that was probably partly for that reason.
Right. And so what do you think of the inquest that they did with Diana?
Completely set up, complete sham. They had some... Well, you look at the people I had before. Two of them stood down because they thought it was suspicious. Dame Butler's Sloss came along with a friend, personal friend of the Queen. Then she tried to come in and sit and form an illegal jury, as so described by three law lords after fire had challenged it. So that she was booted out. And then we had this guy come in, Scott Baker, who, frankly, was just, in my view, keep on saying that for legal reasons, was setting the whole thing up. He's there to gloss over the whole thing, give a nice sham presentation, cover over all the main areas where the serious issues that needed debating. None of them were. Everything was glossed over as an irrelevance. All the important questions were avoided. And I know that because I spent 3 or 4 years beforehand gleaning the evidence about what had happened before, and I know all the things he missed out. anything of any relevance, anything that was potentially dangerous.
The bodyguard that Trevor Jones.
Yeah.
So have you ever read his kind of book on this subject?
Yes, I have. It's appalling. I mean, you've got the facts, some of the facts written down there, I suppose, but the English is dreadful. Absolute rubbish.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if you want to know what happened from his perspective, anything you can do is read it, I suppose, and fill up with the way it's written. I mean, what he's written, though, in any event, I just don't see it. It doesn't fit in with the evidence at all. He has towed the line to make it sound more how they want it to sound. He's taken the side of MI6. This is maybe the comment I made a moment ago about him saying that Karen McKenzie fires housekeeper with a fire. Remember, Bill killed me. And so he was very clearly not intending to put his life on the line. So I think he's just played ball and basically down the line.
So where do you go from here? What's your plans coming up in the future here?
Well, I'm now working with Desmos again to try and get this line set up over here. Amazon.co.uk sorted out. Now the .com has been sorted out. Then I have to try and get my dissertation put back up on Amazon, because that's where it should be. People are entitled to read the truth, I believe, and draw their own conclusions. I need to have the other row of lies removed, taken down, because they should be, and I've got the information for it's going to the US Amazon legal side, and that's going over this next couple of days. It's because the UK side were very happy to leave the way it is. That's exactly where it is, squashing my book and taking away the criticism of the other rubbish, because they wanted me to go and buy the other one, because it's going to take them absolutely nowhere. There's no evidence, it's just going to take them absolutely nowhere. Unless they can handle, they can't handle people reading my book. So that's just happening.
Okay. So now, how do listeners get a hold of you? So if they want to get a hold of you or send you a message, or how would they do that?
I've got a website called, it's Probity Press, probitypress.com. And then come onto that on my website and just drop me a note. I get the notes come through to me very, very quickly indeed, and I respond to all of them. Delighted.
Okay. And where can they get your book now? Right now, it's still at Amazon.
Well, Amazon.com now. I can say this literally was less than a week ago. It's probably about Wednesday. It's probably right. So it's the last 3 or 4 days. And I had FBA and Amazon tested to make sure they could do it. And they said, yes, you can buy it now. So you can get it from Amazon.com.
Great. Well, thank you very much for joining us tonight.
And that's all. Delighted to speak to you.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Has been completed.
The end! By George, he's got it! It is the end!
I'll see you.
If you're lying to me, I'll be back.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.